Talk with a Purpose every Saturday, 9 till noon, WPG Talk Radio 95.5. And I'm John DeMasi. Without further ado, let's bring him in. Seth Grossman, the man who says, wind power, turbine power forever. Right, Seth?
Right. And all I'm really saying, and this is what's in our latest newsletter for libertyandprosperity.com, is how come, you know, we have five wind turbines in Atlantic City. They've been there for like 16 years, since 2006. And I always thought they were supposed to be an experiment. They say these wind turbines could power 2,500 homes. But after 15 years or 16 years, can they power any homes? How come you have Venice Park right across the street? How come they don't use, say, okay, these five wind turbines are going to power Venice Park? Why don't they say these wind turbines are going to power the offices of the ACUA that owns them, the Atlantic County Utilities Authority? How come Stockton University, when they built their $300 million science center, how come they said, oh, we're going to be state-of-the-art. We're going to have our new science center powered by wind and solar. Why not? Because I think the answer is obvious. If they did, then we'd be able to measure how much power comes in. What do you do when the wind doesn't blow? What do you do when you're fixing the stuff? How much backup you need so you have electricity? If the wind suddenly stops blowing, how much does that cost? How much fossil fuel do you burn? In other words, the whole idea of America was built on science, of experiment, of creating models. When Thomas Edison invented electricity in the first place, he would show off all of his new generators and new lights on the steel pier of Atlantic City so people could see how it worked. But you'll notice that they don't want you to know how it works. How many high schools do you know of where they have solar panels and they have a science class? And they say, okay, for our science class today, we're going to thaw out a pizza with the energy we got from our solar panel. Or how many homeowners say, okay, we'll run the washing machine today with the electricity from our solar panels? Have they ever done that anywhere?
Not that I know of.
In fact, I was at the JCC gym listening to somebody, you know, work it out, and they were bragging that they're going to get their solar panels installed in their house, and they're saying, oh yeah, I'm going to make $300 a month from this, and my electric bill will only be $50 a month, and after 15 years, it'll be paid off, and then I won't have any electric bill at all. And it's going on and on. But the thing that nobody tells you is the money that the homeowners with the solar panels, they're not getting money based on the energy, the value of the energy the panels are producing. They're getting paid because there's a state law, and the Board of Public Utilities says the electric company has to pay retail price for the wholesale electricity you produce, whether they need it or not. And because of that, the money that every person with a solar panel, the money they get is not coming from the energy they produce. They're coming from raising the rates of the other 99% of people who don't have them. So every time they increase the number of people with solar panel, that means that there's more people collecting, fewer people paying. So it's another Ponzi scheme. And like all Ponzi scheme, the people who come in early make a lot of money, and the people who come in late get screwed. So just something to think about. Sorry, I went on that rant.
No, I saw your email, and it was really well said, because you pointed out that it was supposed to power 2,500 homes, and it hasn't powered one. So I mean, what's going on here? You know.
They deliberately want to do the razzle-dazzle.
Yeah.
So and the other thing I want to announce, libertyandprosperity.com, besides our meetings, we now have our podcasts that are posted on the website. And I guess one of the good parts of it is now I can listen to myself doing our show.
Yes.
And I'll say, oh, my God, I better not wander off like I normally do. So it's going to make me more disciplined. Something else I like to talk about, because it's very easy to forget. And that is tomorrow, Palm Sunday, starts Holy Week.
Yes.
And then, of course, the following week is Easter. And the way the calendar works out this year, it's like Holy Week for Christians is the same as Holy Week for Jews, because our first Seder of Passover is next Friday, about a week from now. So just as Christians have Holy Week, Jews are going to be, you know, cleaning out the house, preparing for the Seder. And the more you think about Passover, the more you realize how close Jews and Christians really are. Even the holiday. In English, we say Passover and we say Easter. But in most European languages, the word for Passover and Easter is the same, because the Hebrew word for Passover is Pesach, meaning the angel of death passed over the houses of the Jews who were slaves, who had the blood of the perfect lamb as a sacrifice to get out of Egypt. And so in Hebrew, that word is Pesach. But in Spanish, the word for Easter is Pascua. In Italian, it's Pascal. In Greek, it's Pesach. In French, it's Pascal. So, in fact, in Spanish, the word for Passover is a Jewish Easter. You know, the Pascua of the Judeas. And the whole idea, of course, of the Passover sacrifice, you know, the perfect lamb being sacrificed, to make it possible for the Jews to escape the angel of death, the plague that killed the firstborn. You know, very, very similar, and it's a shame that people don't think about that. Because all the, you know, we talk about politics, we talk about Biden, we talk about, you know, all the things that are wrong in America. And really, most of those problems come down to the idea that we have lost our basic Judeo-Christian values, you know, of love thy neighbor as thyself. There's no diversity there. That rule applies to everybody. When we had these holidays and festivals with our families, we'd think about that. Another interesting thing about the Passover Seder is that, here I'm a grandpa, so, you know, it's not where a priest or a minister runs the service in the house to tell the Passover story. It's every parent, every grandparent, has the duty to tell that story to his own family. And basically, the whole Protestant religion was based on that idea of every Christian a priest, that Christians are not supposed to, just ask the priest, what am I supposed to do? You're supposed to read the Bible yourself and teach your own family. So that's a basic part of the Passover and Easter tradition. And of course, the story of tomorrow, Palm Sunday, the idea of Jesus coming into Jerusalem, the conflict between the sophisticated, wealthy elites of Jerusalem, and then you would have the so-called deplorables from Galilee and Nazareth, come into town. And how the Judeans of Jerusalem would look down on Jesus and his followers, very much like you have that split between the elites in America today and the people out in the countryside who preserve the basic values. So there's a lot of stuff to think about during this Holy Week. And of course, growing up in Atlantic City, it was always such a tradition that for Passover, we'd have, my grandparents would be in. And after the Passover Seder, that next Sunday, we'd be getting dressed up in our best clothes and walking a boardwalk for the Easter parade. And it was just, such an American thing to do. So even as we talk about our day-to-day politics, I don't want to lose sight of the meaning of these holidays and how every parent, every grandparent really should take the time to make sure our grandchildren get to know a little bit about this.
It's interesting you mentioned the Easter parade. I mean, you ever see people now on the boardwalk?
I know.
It's just like, are you wearing anything? That's what you want to say to some people. I mean, it's you're right.
And of course, coming of age, I'll never forget, the first time the Steel Pier used to be open in Atlantic City on Easter Sunday. So the big coming of age was when you had a date to take your date to the Steel Pier.
That's right.
Walking with your parents there. So a lot of fond memories about that.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I don't think we'll see that again, Seth. Probably won't see it in our lifetime. But, you know, you brought back many memories. When I was a kid, my mother used to make sure I had my Easter outfit, and I'm sure you had the same thing for Passover. You had the outfit, and you walked on the boards, and it was just it was a nice thing. You know, it was really was a nice thing. So what's on
right,
the
no matter no matter how poor you were, nobody was ever too poor to really be classy on Easter Sunday.
Right.
That's what I remember.
What's on the agenda today for Liberty and Prosperity?
Well, one of them is, I'd say, the top news story, which got little coverage. I don't know if you talked about it. Last week, I talked about how Will Smith, you know, slaps Chris Rock.
Yes.
And the issue wasn't whether he was offended or not offended. The issue was, if you are offended, you know, because someone says something you don't like, does that give you the right to go up to him and punch him in the face or slap him in the face?
Yeah,
why
yeah.
do you have
We're
that?
Saying yes.
Why do you have that? I know we disagreed on that, but why do you have the tolerance of violence? And so I wrote this entire piece about Thomas Sowell and this black redneck culture that blacks picked up from the South that held back. This redneck culture held back Southern whites for 100 years. And it's having the same destructive effect on black Americans. So what happens 1 week after the Will Smith slapping incident? You had an incident in a church basketball game in Georgia, outside of Atlanta, where you had it was two black teams playing each other of eighth graders, and one team didn't like a call made by the referee. So the entire team and the fans jump on a referee who's probably a middle-aged guy, about 40, 50 years old, and they just beat the crap out of him. They knock him on the ground, and they keep kicking him, just like a scene out of Goodfellas. And to the best of my knowledge, no arrests so far. The other referees didn't do anything. Police never called. It's almost this has become normal in America. And to me, that raises a lot of issues. It's that redneck culture that has, and nobody's allowed to talk about, it's not race that is separating Americans, it's culture. And the idea that if someone offends you or if a referee makes a bad call, that it's okay for you to just knock them down and beat the crap out of them. Now, that's all on our libertyandprosperity.com website, but it never made the national news. But that incident explains so much. If you have eighth graders have the ability to just beat the hell out of a referee at a church basketball game because they don't like a call, now you understand what the police have to go through whenever they say, police shot at an unarmed youth, 16 years old. Well, of course you could be, an unarmed youth could kill you. And the other thing that the main part of the story is the silence of the media. If it had been a black referee and if whites had insulted him, it would be national wall-to-wall
absolutely
network news.
Absolutely.
But because it is black eighth graders beating the hell out of a black referee who probably just volunteered, to referee a church game, it's not news. It doesn't matter. It's like they're shifting the perception of reality to make you think that every conflict or every injustice in America today is related to whites mistreating blacks when you're missing the real issue that is really destroying black communities. So that's one of our topics. And finally, I'll leave with the final topic. You said that we have insecurity at the border.
Yes.
And I strongly disagree with that. We have an invasion at the border.
Okay.
We have basically 1 to 2 million people coming here, and we have a Democratic president who is letting them in, and not just letting them in, but shipping them all across the country, and not just shipping them all across the country, but shipping them to the areas where Democrats think they need the votes to win the next election. And I don't think any attention, even I don't think Trump has pointed this out, but when you look at the states that Trump lost that he could have won, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, all those states had about 100,000 to 200,000 illegal immigrants deliberately settled there. And I'm almost positive that most of them somehow got ballots because they were mail-in ballots. Who could tell whether a mail-in ballot went to someone who's a legal citizen or someone who's not? And so as more and more Americans wise up to the evil of the Democratic Party, it makes sense that the Democrats have to bring in 2 million more illegal immigrants to make sure that's the voting army of occupation to swing the election next time. So I think it's very serious. I look at that the same way the Ukrainians look at the Russians invading their country. The only difference is that these new invaders, they don't have weapons because they don't have to have weapons because our Democrats are letting them in deliberately for the purpose of controlling our elections for the next 2 years and making sure people who think like you and me, Republicans, conservatives, Christians, people who believe in the intact family, to make sure we can never win a national election again. So we have to treat it like an invasion, and that's my final thought.
All right, Seth, as always, good stuff. Seth Grossman, libertyandprosperity.com is the website. The meeting happens in a few minutes, 9:30 this morning, at Sal's Coal Fire Pizza on New Road in Summers Point. It's Talk with a Purpose, Saturdays 9 till noon, WPG Talk Radio 95.5. I'm John DeMasi. Talk with a Purpose will continue. First, we have Matt, and then John, and then Pete. We'll get to all of you, and maybe we'll get to you as well at 609-407-1450. We'll get started right after these words.